For copyright reasons, the producers of Taking Hugh for Granted would like to state that this podcast is in no way associated with the actor Hugh John Mungo Grant, nor does it endorse his views or represent him in any way. We simply review Mr. Grant's films and hope to shine light upon some of the lesser-known classics from his illustrious career. Hugh, if you're listening, we hope you approve.
Listen, I did film and television studies at university for 3 years. I spent hours reading countless books and articles on subjects spanning from film all the way to television. Not a single one mentioned Hugh Grant once.
I achieved the hardest qualification across any university or college ever, a 2-1 in history. Let me tell you, the only thing that I learned was that we, as a society, have a history of denying and neglecting Hugh Grant's artistic and cultural relevance, not just in this country, but in the entire world.
I met Oscar at a Hugh Grant-themed event I put on at the Students' Union.
It felt as though Digory and I were the only ones there, and we agreed that there was a Hugh Grant-shaped hole in academia.
We decided to put it right ourselves. We want to show people that he's an icon in acting.
We want to show people he's more than just a bumbling posh guy.
I'm Digory Waite.
And I'm Oscar Beardmore Gray.
And this is...
Taking Hugh for Granted.
Hello and welcome to Taking Hugh for Granted with your hosts Digory Waite and Oscar Beardmore Gray, the show in which two friends watch every single film starring Hugh Grant and ask a simple question: is this film Taking Hugh for Granted? Is this film good on its own, or does it rely on the bumbling Brit for its acclaim? This week we're talking about a boy. But first, Oscar, how the hell are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I had a fantastic weekend. Went to see The Gentlemen for the second time of asking.
Yeah, it was.
Probably better than the first time. Mm. I think the first time around, when I saw a review, of course, I was a little bit nervous, perhaps, and preoccupied about thinking about the podcast. So this time I was fully able to just sit back and relax. And lots of people were there just for Hugh Grant, you could tell. Lots of laughs. And interestingly enough, I was with a friend who said the two things she didn't like about the film were the weird rape bit at the end and the racism. And this was without any precursor of what we said in the pod, and that was exactly what we said. So I think we're bang on.
We're absolutely bang on. Yeah, we didn't actually necessarily mention in the podcast the implication of the rape bit, but that was really, really odd, that bit. And yeah, it was but the racism as well. Didn't sit right. But enjoyed the rest of the film? Did they?
Enjoyed it. Very much enjoyed it.
What do you think of Hugh Grant? That's the main question.
Mate, his performance got better. It's like a fine wine.
Exactly. So yeah, anything else going on? Have we in the life of Hugh Grant and ourselves?
Not really. I had one piece of fan mail in though today. An old friend of mine messaged me and said something that I think we'll all find quite funny. She said, just wanted to let you know, I don't know if I told you this, but my mum has actually shagged Hugh Grant.
What? No
yeah.
way.
I'll keep it anonymous for now.
Of course. I have so many questions running through my head. Oh, man.
Can't confirm nor deny this rumour, but...
Indeed. Now, obviously, you've met your friend, but have you met your friend's mother? Can you give us any very vague things about their character or, you know, what might have...
I haven't met her.
Right, because I'd love to know what she was like so we could see what...
I think she's very beautiful, though. So,
She has to be. She absolutely has to be, and I'm sure she is. If she's a mother to one of your friends, I'm sure she is as well, inside and out.
Look out the window, look out the window, look out the window, it's Hugh Grant in a Pret.
Today we are talking about a boy.
Yes.
Fantastic film. Have we got a little synopsis from our favourite synopsy?
Let me just check. Yeah, synopsy? Let me just check. Simon! Simon! Do you want to do a synopsis?
About a Boy, directed by Chris and Paul Weitz and released in 2002. 38-year-old Will Freeman, played by Hugh Grant, is a slacker who has lived comfortably off the royalties of a song written by his deceased father, and as such has never had to work a day in his life. In search of available women, Will invents an imaginary son and starts attending single-parent meetings, As a result, he meets Marcus, played by Nicholas Holt, an odd 12-year-old boy with problems at school. Gradually, they become friends, and as Will teaches Marcus how to be the cool kid at school, Marcus helps Will to realise growing up has nothing to do with age.
So, Oscar, About a Boy, 2002, any idea of where Hugh Grant is at this point in his career?
Well, I actually thought that we saw a little bit of Hugh in this film that we see in the Renaissance currently happening right now, I thought. Because here he actually is the, you know, he's one of two of the main characters. So he really had, his character can really blossom and develop. Mm. And you see that kind of like self-deprecation and comedy that we're seeing a lot of in the Renaissance. Mm. So it was actually, if you, it's kind of like a look into what might actually happen in the future, I think, this film.
What do you think about Hugh's character? What do you think about the start of the film?
Well, I mean, it's plain to see that he is an absolute dickhead, really. I mean, you can't get around it. He's proud of the fact that he does absolutely nothing for a living, which is, you know what, is actually quite, it's fair play to him. He's literally just like, I do nothing. And what did you do before that? Nothing. And he doesn't seem to have much care for anyone else or anything.
Nope.
And that's kind of how the story develops, because suddenly he gets his attachment to Marcus, who is this rather sad boy whose mum is depressed and he's getting bullied at school. And for the first time, it seems like Hugh is doing something other than sitting around watching Countdown and drinking beer in the bath.
Yeah, and just caring about himself. Yeah, so, I think this film, I was sat there this morning just like watching this and just with in all of Hugh's scenes, had this grin on my face, this maniacal grin, and it felt as though my fangs were showing when I was smiling, because I was, when I was smiling at this, I was like, everything that I enjoy about every scene with Hugh Grant in is the despicable, disgusting, decrepit, promiscuous, dark side of me, of the D-Dog, and it's like, and that's what it's appealing to, in a way, and that's why I'm sniggering and sneering and smiling, and it's disgusting, it's despicable, but it's so good, and it culminates in the line. I was speaking with Synopsis Simon, I came out of my room, and he's like, oh, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm watching About a Boy, and he was like, wow, that's a fantastic Hugh Grant film, and it always reminds me of that line.
Will.
What does that mean? Oh, please, what?
Well, look at yourself. You're 38 and you've never had a job or a relationship that lasted longer than 2 months. I wouldn't exactly say you were okay. I mean, I would say you were a disaster. I mean, what is the point of your life?
Bloody hell. You're probably right. There's probably no point to my life, but thank you for bringing it up.
Will, the reason we wanted you to come here today was, well, we wanted to ask you,
how would you like to be Imogen's godfather?
Seriously?
Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm really, really touched, but you must be joking. I couldn't possibly think of a worse godfather for Imogen. You know what I'm like? I'll drop her on her head at her christening. I'll forget all her birthdays until her 18th when I'll take her out and get her drunk and possibly, let's face it, you know, try and shag her.
I mean, that is horrendous, but I just feel like it's perfectly shows his character, and it's just on the line of like, it's not acceptable, but it just sort of works.
And there's some obviously very serious undertones of this film which make it even more sinister and actually comedic in a way, like the fact that he tries to pick up women by making up a 2-year-old son, and then the fact that he's kind of like oblivious to the problems that Marcus has for a while, and the fact that his mum is depressed, and he's kind of just like, he's more worried about the fact that Marcus is trying to set him up with her and calls her like a lefty lunatic or something and a hippie and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, I do. I
have
this
steak. What the hell are these little after-school tea parties about?
Hi. Sorry? What did you say?
Well, I was just wondering why a single, childless man would want to hang out with a 12-year-old boy every day.
Wait a minute, you didn't tell your mum that you've been coming round?
I think I forgot.
Tell me what? What are you doing with my son?
Wait a minute. What exactly are you suggesting here?
Well, I'm not suggesting anything.
Well, I think you are. I think you were suggesting that I've been interfering with your son.
I'm simply asking you why you entertain 12-year-olds in your flat.
Oh, my God.
What do you have to say for yourself? Well?
Don't well me. Don't well me about them, for Christ's sake. He comes around uninvited every night of the week. And do you know why? Because he's having the shit bullied out of him at school. And you haven't got a clue. You're sending him out there like a lamb to the slaughter. He's been taken to pieces every day of the week, you daft fucking hippie.
Two things I want to pick up on. The film does a great job of mixing the two scenes and the lightness and the darkness. Hugh Grant, like you say, it's like it's funny. That's where all the jokes are coming from. He's, you know, treating women like utter shit, left, right, and center, and he's just being an obnoxious, lazy bastard himself. All great fun, and it's intercut in and spliced in between some pretty, like, you know, sad scenes with Nicholas Holt, the Marcus the kid, and his mum, whose mum's clinically depressed. This kid's really having a shit time, and the film does a really good job of neither side winning out, because like there's other films where the lightness will any darkness, you're like, well, this is a funny film, so anything that's dark, I'm not really it's not really actually resonating, I don't think this is dark, and any darkness maybe will win out, and it'll be like any funniness, you're like, well, this isn't funny, I'm just really sad. But this film does a great job of, like, I was on my own watching this, laughing out loud, which I always think is great if you're on your own and watching a film and you laugh out loud. I think that's really good. And then straight into, like, Nicholas Holt's on screen and I'm just frowning, like, fuck me, this is sad. I think that's a great job of playing that yo-yo game.
I completely agree with you. And it seems like a more real film than your Love Actually's, your Four Weddings and a Funeral. Because those are just, like, soppy dramas where, like, people are really nasty to each other, but everyone's kind of like, oh, that was fun, like, good old jolly British film.
Mm.
But this one, actually, I think is, maybe it's because it's based on a book.
Yeah.
But it's a proper story that it doesn't sort of leave you, it doesn't make you, it's not trying to intentionally leave you feeling like all fuzzy and gooey, but leaves you with a sense of like, okay, well, I've taken away some messages from this film. I've taken away what it means to not be self-centered, what it means to have proper companionship, what it means to, be depressed or have problems at school, and how these problems are real. And yeah, it just left me with that slightly different feeling, I guess, to those other films, which are a bit superficial in a way.
I know what you mean, and I it's weird because a lot of people in the interviews as well that I saw with Hugh sort of lumped this film in with Love Actually and Four Weddings and a Funeral, etc. And I kind of agree with you, and so did Hugh. He said, I wouldn't quite say that this film was in the same vein. I mean, obviously it's like British, it's like a comedy, and there's, I suppose, romantic elements to it, but I think it is the fact that it's based on a book as well. I think it has that level of depth, and apparently they really, really looked at the source material. And I think that, and something you might not be able to get with a screenplay as the immediate source material as you would get with a book, is there's so much more that you can draw from than if you're just writing straight onto a screenplay and it all comes out that way. Rather than the book, they probably had more they could dig out of it. And I think that really came across. Whilst we're on the subject, though, we don't want to talk too much about the ending, but I think it is interesting that they did dramatically change the ending from the book to the film version, because the film, they just didn't think that the book version, much like books do, didn't have had quite a wishy-washy ending, like books can, because, you know, their books are a different form, whereas they thought they needed a bit of a bigger ending, so they went with the whole talent show thing, which does feel quite Hollywood, and it does feel quite out of place. As soon as they jump in that Aldi and start flying down the freeway to go and fly down the road to go and see him, I thought, this has suddenly become just another feel-good film.
Having said that, though, Hugh Grant playing the guitar and singing, mate, that is brilliant.
Yeah.
I felt so flushed with fever, embarrassed by the crowd. I felt she found my letters and read each one of them. I prayed that he would finish, but he just kept right on, strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly.
Give it a rest.
Killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life, with his words, killing me softly.
I wanted to move on, though, to what you thought about Hugh's appearance in this film, because it's a bit different to some of the other films in the period.
I think that is something that's very good to pull up on. His look in this film is very, very North London, but we're talking his age range, 2002 North London, very trendy. He's wearing jeans, you know, sometimes like some kind of tight-ish fitting sweaters and stuff. And that sort of haircut, which is kind of, we don't have the curtains that we usually see. We don't have, you know, any of that like too posh bullshit. We've got this cool kind of, he's clearly styled it in some sort of way that it looks like messy, but actually he clearly has done stuff with it. I think they did a great job of making him look like his character. A guy who's cool. He is the guy that, like he says to Nicholas Holt's character, I could pick out some nice shoes, I could pick out a cool CD, but that's all I can do. His character is just quite superficial and a bit too cool for school. What did you think about his look?
Well, I was reading a review. It said that he was 41 in this in this film, and he noticeably had lost a lot of weight. And obviously, like you said, abandoned the trademark floppy hair.
Yeah.
And that he looked noticeably older and actually looked good on him. And another thing is that because he'd lost weight, his sort of face was less, is a bit, it's not gaunt, but it's skinnier. Mm. And his sort of cheeks are a bit narrower. And his, this is a great line, his eyes that used to peer with love me cuteness now betray a shark's casual cunning, which I think really fitted in with the, with the role that he was playing, because he's playing that slightly sinister and cunning character, and his persona and hairstyle and clothes kind of match that. I thought,
mate, that's what a great line. Can you read that line just once more, because I think it's so perfect for this.
Yeah, and he added that Grant's pillowy cheeks are flatter and a bit drawn, and the eyes that used to peer with love me cuteness now betray a shark's casual cunning.
I mean, that's just honestly hitting the nail on the head.
This is HMS Submarine 502 over. Come on in, HMS Submarine 52 over. We see something strange starboard side, 100 meters ahead. Roger that. What do you see, Captain? It looks like... Hold on. It appears to be a huge shark with flat cheeks and drawn eyes. I beg your pardon, Captain? With the cunning face of... Oh, God! Hugh Grant! He's coming straight for us! I don't think we're gonna make it! Do you copy, Captain? Repeat, do you copy? God damn it, Hugh Grant.
another thing I wanted to bring up briefly, if I may, is that I spotted another Hugh Grantism
talk to me.
That we see later on in his movies. Mm. So it's actually I saw it a lot in Paddington 2, and then I saw it here.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is a slight sideways glance where he sort of looks sideways and his teeth go like.
Well, explain what you're doing for the listeners at home.
I can't do it. Yeah, it's kind of like.
Yeah, so
he looks into the corner of his eyes and looks a little bit like, if you know the emoji that has the teeth that are kind of like, I'm not doing this well because
no,
I'm on radio.
It's almost,
but like teeth clenched and like yeah mouth goes wide,
yes.
And eyes go to the corner and he's like, oh, it's like a oh shit, I'm in trouble kind of look.
You are absolutely right. Yeah, it's like the corners of your mouths go try and hit the bottom corners of each side of your cheekbones, and you're like at the bottom of them. Yeah, and then you're like so you're talking like this, and you touch your bottom. Yeah,
think Wallace and Gromit.
Like. Yeah. But yeah, it just looks a bit more like, oh shit. You're absolutely right. He does that a lot in Paddington 2, because obviously he's constantly thinking, oh shit, I think they've got me.
Yeah, he does it a lot. So I noticed that a couple of times he does that here, and I was thinking, I see into the future in Paddington 2.
Indeed. I wonder whether, could we count his use of the word bugger as a Hugh Grantism?
100%. I mean, I feel the word bugger is a weird word. Because, like, bugger. They use bugger so much in these, like, this era of British film.
Yeah.
So I it's more of our parents' generation of a word, but I don't tell people to bugger off very often.
No.
But it seems like a quintessential kind of, like, Hugh Grant word.
Yeah.
Everything's, I guess, probably the reason why they use it in a lot of these films is because they want it to be a 12A or PG or whatever, probably a 12.
Yeah.
And so they replace the F word with bugger off.
Oh, bugger off. Well, this one, I think this might be a 15. Because I think they say fuck a few times in this one, don't they?
I think they do a few times, but you know how these things work, where you're allocated like maybe three or four F words in a film.
Yeah. I remember when Judi Dench said fuck in Skyfall, I think she's like, we're really fucked now or something. And I was like, oh my God!
Not Judy.
Yeah, I was looking around the cinema like, did anyone else hear that? It's a 12A! What? What's 12A in America? Obviously, I'm looking out for our American listeners, aka Mary, hello Mary. What have they got in America? Is it same Canada? Have you got the same classifications?
I don't know, actually. I mean, I know it's R-rated.
Hmm.
But I'm not sure, actually. Maybe. Because I guess now that I'm legally allowed in the cinema,
who cares about ratings?
That stuff. Like, you only care about ratings when you're like, when you're 13 and mum hasn't let you watch that 15 or 18 everyone else is watching. You're like, oh, wow.
Yeah. Or the time, what was the first 15 that you saw at the cinema?
In the cinema? Oh, my God.
Can you remember?
No, I can't. What was yours? I bet you know, like...
Yeah. I'm really happy with my first 15. I watched probably... My dad tried to sneak me into Cloverfield, the film about the monster going around destroying the world. But we hadn't actually bought a ticket for that. So when we went in there, my heart was pounding, first because it was a scary film, and two, because it was like, I shouldn't have been there. So like, it was double jeopardy. So I was like, Dad, I want to go. And he was like, don't be scared. I was like, Dad, I want to go. Anyway, so I didn't get that. Then, but the actual film I first saw was The Hurt Locker.
Film. Very good film.
Great first 15 to watch. I think it won the Oscar for best film or best director or something. Anyway, but my dad went up to the ladies checking tickets and just started talking to her, being like, I'm seeing The Hurt Locker this evening. Oh, I'm very excited. And then basically behind him was just like, had his little hand out, being like, go, run past. So I just ran past. And then about halfway through the film, they walked up the aisle. And they started whispering to my dad, being like, how old is this kid? So they must have like looked on CCTV or something to be like, who's in the thing? How weird is that? But anyway, my dad, I don't know what he said to him, but probably just said, come on, I'm his dad. Yeah, bugger off. Exactly. He was like, oh, bugger off.
Look over there. Hugh Grant's in a prep. Look over there. He's holding a baguette.
Now, let's talk about his performance. Is there any... Because I want to make a point about his performance. But what about you? Is there anything about his actual performance, the way he played the character, that you thought was particularly good or particularly bad? Or
You crack on, because I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it, and then maybe I'll chip in.
I think his portrayal of this character... I was really struck by... that beginning sequence when we are like learning about the characters and everything. I think Hugh's performance here genuinely is akin to that of the Renaissance. I really think his performance is so good, because this film is littered with great jokes, and a lot of them, the lion's share of them, go to Hugh's character Will. And I think the temptation as an actor, having been one myself at my time at Université.
Well, of course, yeah. my role is the pillow man, if you'd experienced as well.
Oh, yeah, exactly, of course. Of course, as a couple of actors sat here, and obviously I was in up to three roles at university, we know what acting is like. Anyway, but as an actor, you might look at those lines and think, I've spotted the joke, I see the joke, and I'm going to really play into it and be like, oh, this line's a joke. But, and I know it's quite a nuanced point I'm trying to make, but basically, you know, if it sounds like his character is making a joke so that everyone can know, oh, I'm joking, this is a joke, it's not that funny. Whereas he plays it so straight and so deadpan and so, yeah, just so believable that it actually makes not only the jokes funnier, but also I'm there and I think this Will guy exists. This is a real person. And that is what acting is. When Brad Pitt's name is on the billing and you go to the film, and by the end of the film you go, fuck me, that was Brad Pitt, wasn't it? That's how I felt in this film a few times. I was like, I'm not watching this film because I do a Hugh Grant podcast. I'm watching this film. There's a guy called Will in it. Oh shit, Will's Hugh Grant. That's what this film felt like for me. It was brilliant.
I agree. You're spot on there. And I also think it shouldn't be underestimated the chemistry that he got with the kid. Because that can't be easy as a big shot actor and you're told, you know, you're going to be playing this role where there's a 12-year-old kid who is playing the other main lead and has to, you know, not only do you have to interact with him, but sort of carry the film with him. And I mean, kudos to Nicholas Hoult, who has actually turned out to be a really good actor in his own right. Has one of the worst haircuts in living memory in this film. I think I saw an interview of him. He said that they literally got a bowl and like cut around his head.
Yeah.
And like try to make it look as bad as possible.
And they did a shoddy job with that as well, because it does slightly veer off to one side and then back in again. It's so bad.
But yeah, like you said, there's a genuine chemistry where you sort of believe that him and Will and Hugh are like an actual sort of father figure relationship. And it's very believable.
Didn't you hear me?
Yeah, I heard you. What do you want me to do about it?
I don't know. You could talk to her.
Oh yeah, and what would I say?
I don't know.
Well, why would she listen to me? Who am I to her? I'm nobody.
You're not nobody, you're...
Who? Who do you think I am? Who do you think you are? You come here uninvited, you disrupt my life, you screw things up. What do you want from me, Marcus? This isn't my problem. I'm not your family, mate. I'm not. I'm not your uncle. I'm not your big brother. And I think we've established pretty firmly now, I'm not your father either, am I? I tell you what I am. I'm the guy who's really good at choosing trainers or records, okay? That's it. I can't help you with real things. I can't help you with anything that means anything.
Taking you for granted. Taking you for granted. Taking you for granted. What did you think, lads? Were they taking you for granted?
Yeah, Oscar, is this film taking you for granted?
Diggory, once again, as we've seen repeatedly on this podcast, repeatedly, all you haters out there who are saying that Hugh plays the same role in every film, again, this is one of his best-known roles. You know, probably in the top five, top seven of things that he's played. And if you actually go down and analyze this film properly, there's no doubt that he has actually played this role impeccably. And like you said, in a way that's very convincing. And for that reason, I don't think we can be taking Hugh for granted in this film.
Oscar,
what do you think?
I mean, Oscar, come on. You've put it perfectly. We've talked about how hard the role is to play. We've talked about the fact it's not like roles he's played before. We've talked about the fact it's a fantastic screenplay. It's got a great cast. I mean, Hugh slots in perfectly. It's a hard role to play, and he plays it with aplomb. This man, this hero, Hugh Grant, is not being taken for granted. This is a great film on its own. You're going to go in and watch it, and you're going to come away not just with the feel-good, mushy factor that you get with some of his other films, but you'll come away and think, damn, I've really learned something. And I mean, what more do you want from an hour and 40 minutes?
And it's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Perfect.
We don't watch our films illegally when we review this podcast. So
No.
Get your streaming service.
No, I had to whip out the old VHS to watch White Mischief. I went to 421 charity shops in London. I finally found one. Found a VHS with White Mischief on. So, yeah. Don't watch films.
That's a collector's item.
Yeah, honestly, I actually wish I had that. Imagine if I had like a serious VHS collection of Hugh Grant films, I'd look like the ultimate freak. And that's what we're. I mean, I've already got the podcast. Well, also, I've already got the T-shirt, which Oscar's seen in the flesh.
Well, I was speaking to another fan, but just before we leave, that I another fan of the podcast over the weekend who was telling me that they are an ardent listener, and I said, well, we'll have to sort out some kind of premium membership for you, and that might mean a T-shirt or something. So if you want a T-shirt, we could organise that and start sending those out, and Digri and I will wear one every episode.
Every episode. So enjoy yourselves. Have a wonderful day, evening, whatever you're doing, whatever time of day it is. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, and enjoy a bit of Hugh Grant in your life.
Bye.
Damn.